Hi there, and thanks for joining us on this episode. The car dealership marking a milestone, the Eggman who has grown his flock, and the cracks showing in the glass ceiling. I'm Jonathan Healy, and this is Red Business.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
Now, we've already started playing our favourite game while driving around as a family, which is spotting the new Regs. Now, I've only seen a handful so far because, for obvious reasons, we're not driving around as much as we would. But there are 211s out there, and my next guest is responsible for putting a lot of them there. And it's a very big year for his family's company. John Lahan of McCrew Motors and Lahan Motors, how are you?
I'm very well, Jonathan. Thanks for having me on.
So 50 years since McCrew Motors first opened. Now, you weren't around at that stage, I'm presuming, were you?
I wasn't, thankfully, no. It was founded by my father and two other gents, John O'Farrell and Micheál McSweeney, in 1971. It became a Toyota franchise in 1975, and I suppose it's been trading away fairly well since, thankfully. I would have joined it full time in 99, so I'm in the business, I suppose, 21, going on 22 years. Would have done summers, I suppose, when I was a young fellow, but full time from 99 onwards.
Yeah, so it is a, in many ways, a traditional car sales operation. You have a franchise. In your case, it's for Toyota and for Lexus, certainly on the Airport Road. You sell their cars, but you have to bring your own individual skill and flair to it. I mean, if your dad sold cars, did you get your skill from him?
I suppose I would have got some skills from him. I don't know whether they'd be... They wouldn't be what you'd come across in a modern day learning.
Well, to be fair, the industry has changed a lot over 50 years, hasn't it?
It has. Definitely, the skill set acquired by him back in the day would have been slightly different. I suppose my background is I'm an accountant by trade, so I would have gone through that form of training. And when I joined, I joined in as accountant, so I wasn't, I suppose, directly involved in the sales day to day myself. You know, I'd be selling away to friends and acquaintances of mine, but my background was more the numbers, I suppose.
Oh, Kabir, I'd much prefer to deal with a salesman than an accountant if I was buying a car. The accountant would give you no leeway whatsoever, and negotiation is half the battle. Now, we'll talk about the current state of play in just a minute, but given that the company has been around a long time and is in its second generation, it's weathered storms before. I mean, if it got through the 70s, the 80s, the big crash a decade ago, and now, I mean, you've seen it all, and you've seen everything that can go wrong in an economy and how to trade through it.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose I've always thought of the motor industry as more of an exaggerated form of what goes on in the economy. You know, we just get bigger cycles of what the general economy is. So if the economy is going well, we can be going very well. If the economy is going badly, we can be on the floor altogether. So we do seem to get a more exaggerated form of the cycle. Like, I suppose, yeah, the last crash in 08, 09, particularly tough in the motor industry. You know, it went from... I think in 08, there was something like 160,000 cars sold. In 09, it was 55,000 new cars sold. So it was a spectacular crash. So, you know, you weather something like that, you become more used to tough times, and you can maybe take them in your stride a bit more. Certainly there's challenges. Now, there's always been challenges in the motor industry. There's always changes going on. You know, you'd break
this. But there's something different about this, though, John. And it's the fact that it's not everybody has been impacted the same way. There are people who have worked through, and there are people who have a lot of savings. They're just not overly keen on spending them just yet. So has that helped insulate you in some way, knowing that it's not like the last time where everybody was impacted? There are people who want to buy cars, there are people who want to upgrade their cars, and they'll be coming through your door again at some stage in the next few months.
Yeah, no, definitely that is the case. I suppose, like, if we call this lockdown number 3, in lockdown number 1 we were more or less totally shut. And at the time, you really didn't know where you were going. You didn't know when you'd be opening again, and you didn't know what level of business you would have. So, I was looking at all my used stock going, geez, what's going to happen with all this? We were lucky enough in that we opened for after sales in the first wave of things coming back on the 18th of May. We opened for sales on the 8th of June. And once we opened, we got very busy very quickly, which was reassuring, particularly in used cars. But I suppose even in new cars, we would have had in July, where you have your second reg plate coming along, we would have had a normal July. The only difference really was probably car hire that wasn't there this year. So, the decrease you would have seen in the motor industry last year probably wasn't as bad if you took the car hire out. So definitely big demand for used cars last year, and we would anticipate that again. And like you're saying, I suppose people do have the few bob. They're not booking the holidays, they're not going out
Yeah.
for the meal at the weekend. So
Yeah, and they might very well decide to upgrade their motor instead. The other factors that you were kind of hinting at there, you mentioned the B word, Brexit. It's possibly a good thing for you guys because I know from speaking to people in the motor trade, the cars coming in from Britain, and we had become a bit of a dumping ground for the diesels they didn't want. They're all going to be subject now to a lot of extra VAT and other taxes. So that does, are you happy now that 2021 will see the back of that, that you're not going to see massive imports anymore from the UK?
Yeah, I think that is the case. There's going to be tariffs on the used cars, even though the Brexit deal that was done at the last minute gets rid of tariffs on most custom between the UK and Europe. It doesn't do it on the used cars because they're not seen to be originate unless the car originates in the UK. It's going to be subject to a 10% tariff, and there's very few cars originating, as in manufactured in the UK. So, for example, a German car or a Japanese car that's being imported now from the UK will be subject to 10% tax on top of VAT, on top of the NOx tax. So, yeah, I would think it will pretty much do away with imports. They'd grown threefold, I suppose, since 2016. I think they'd increased about 140% or something. So they'd probably fall back down to maybe what was there maybe in 2015, pre the Brexit,
Yeah,
pre the exchange rate.
which again is probably pretty minimal when you think about it. The other massive cultural shift, and I suppose this is probably going to be the defining thing for your industry in the next decade, is the transition away from fossil fuels, burning dead dinosaurs to get you from A to B, and the transition to electric. Now, one of your brands, Lexus, has been pretty much ahead of the curve on this for quite some time. Toyota is coming along with it now. Are we going to see the end of diesel sales this decade, do you think? And is there a possibility? I mean, I think it'll happen. The possibility that it'll happen a little faster than people anticipate right now.
Yeah, I think we are seeing a big shift over towards, I suppose, getting out of diesel really into hybrids and plug-in hybrids and electric. Like, it can only really happen, I suppose, as quick as those products are available. That's going to be the biggest problem. The government were very ambitious by saying 1 million electric cars by 2030. Like, that can't happen because they won't be supplied in those quantities, because they're not being made in those quantities. The components are different. You can't click your fingers and just come up with an electric car just like that. So it's going to take it will I think the customer will shift over, but they can only shift over to what's available to purchase. So I don't think it's going to go full electric that fast. I think hybrids and plug-in hybrids are going to be probably the answer in the short term. Electric will
Yeah.
be a part of it, but it's still not. It's going to take a while.
So look, you are entering the 50th year. Have you much plan? I mean, it's very hard to plan a birthday of any kind in the current environment. What have you got planned for the next couple of months to celebrate the 50th anniversary of McCroom Motors?
I suppose what we have planned is that we will plan something, what it is and when it is. We're not. We'll ride out this for the moment, and I suppose we'll plan maybe when we can have more certainty about what kind of event we can have. But we'll certainly do something to mark it, because I think it's important to just for the staff and the customers just to mark it in some format. But I haven't let my head go there yet, because you know, it's kind of pointless at the moment, I suppose, when we don't know what the parameters are.
Well, look, keep turning out the 2-1-1s so my kids will be entertained when we do eventually start driving around again, because it is a fun game. I remember doing it as a child, watching for the new number plates. John Lahan of Lahan Motors and McCrew Motors, congratulations on reaching that big milestone, and here's hoping to a good 2021 for you.
Thanks a million, Jonathan. And come here if you're looking for a 2-1-1, you know where we are. Don't be shy. We look after
Thanks,
you.
John.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
Now, my next guest spotted a gap in the market for delivery of farm fresh produce straight to customers' doors, which became rather important in the last 10 months or so, as people were not out and about as much as they were before. It's a great story, and I'm delighted to be joined by the co-founders of Farmzy, Carmen and Michael O'Sullivan. How are you, lads? And you're very welcome to Red Business.
Hi, Jonathan, and Happy New Year, and thanks for having us on the show. Appreciate it.
Yes, thanks very much, Jonathan.
Delighted to have you on. Now, you're down West Cork, is that right?
That's right, yeah. We're just outside Bandon Town.
Okay, and it says here, and I'll read it up because it looks wonderful written down. The whole thing began in 2018 when you had three hens and a cockerel: Henrietta, Mrs. Brown, Mags and Willie. Now, you've managed to grow the flock a little bit since you had the four of them, haven't you?
Absolutely, Jonathan, yeah. So basically, we had an honesty box outside the door, and local people were starting to buy eggs off us, and it kind of just grew from there. And we got in some more hens then, and I started going door to door in Kinsale, and people just started buying them off of me, and word of mouth got out then, and just basically, I suppose, it took off from there, and you know, it's gone from strength to strength after that.
Yeah, and it really took off last year when the first lockdown happened, and Michael's egg customers were asking if he was able to source other produce. So we knew some great local producers, vegetable producers and organic meat producers. So we approached them, and they were all very, very willing to help us.
Okay, so you were able to spread that love a little bit. At one stage, you were being referred to as the Eggman, Michael. Now, I can't tell from here whether you have hair or a hat or what you have, but how did the old Eggman name sit with you?
Yeah, it was kind of cute, I suppose, with the kids saying to their parents when I come to the door, and they'd say, the Eggman's outside, and, you know, it was sweet, like, and that was before COVID kicked in, like, you know.
Yeah, well, you see, years ago, we did have the milkman and we had the breadman. We still have the freezer man. I don't know if you have one yourself, a fellow who comes and sells us frozen food. So the Eggman makes sense. Now, you've expanded the flock, as I said. How many laying hens have you got right now, Carmen?
Oh, we'd have about 100 hens now, over 100 hens. And we've added ducks as well. So we're branching into duck eggs. They're very popular.
Right. And again, the management of this, if you had started so small, and it was only 2018, so it's not even 3 years ago, you'd had to build up somewhere to keep them and make sure they're safe, because I'm sure the foxes of Bandon have you well marked at this stage as somewhere where there's a good dinner. Did you have to put a lot of infrastructure in, Michael, and build a lot?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we had to do chain link fencing and stuff like that. And we had to put up a shade, you know, a proper poultry shed. And yeah, there's a lot of money gone into it, but it's paying dividends now.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other products that you're selling on farmzy.ie. People really bought into this in the last 12 months. We've kind of fallen back in love with local and the idea of supporting people who are growing things or manufacturing things or making things near us. Carmen, the timing was bang on for this. Was it a COVID project, or had you got the groundwork laid when COVID hit?
We were talking about adding more products to what Michael was doing, because it made sense, you know, to sell something else, you know, every time he called to a door, if he had something else to add with the eggs. So we had been talking about it, but it sort of kicked into play when the lockdown happened, and his customers were, you know, in a bit of a bind, having to you know, stay in, you know, their kids were at home, so it wasn't as easy for them to go to the supermarkets. So it really came into play when everything locked down last year.
Yeah. And where is everything listed now, Michael? I mean, the website is farmsy.ie. What can people find if they go on to it?
So basically you'll find eggs, meat, parsnips, carrots, mixed leaves, microgreens, spinach, cabbage, kale. You'll find a butterfly leg of lamb, stewing lamb, sirloin steak, minced beef, stewing beef.
And this isn't you going to the supermarket, packing it up and going out. This is all from local suppliers, is it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so all our meat comes is organic. It comes from Dewhello Organic in Boherbui. And our veg comes from Food for Humans. They're in Ballinhasig and also Horizon Farm outside Kinsale. And Ancient Organics. And we get organic potatoes from Upper Forest Organic Farm. And so it's all locally sourced. It's all grown on our doorsteps, literally. And we're just connecting the dots, so it makes it easier for producers to connect with consumers.
So how far do you travel now? Because obviously a delivery service is automatically constrained by the number of delivery people and a geographical area. How far out do you reach?
We're currently delivering between Bandon and Blarney, and we'd cut through Kinsale, Carrigline, and Cork City, Rochestown. So it's kind of like a reverse sea at the moment, our route.
Michael, they're working you to the bone here if you're doing all that on your own.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy it. You know, I do enjoy it, you know. So, yeah, it's going well at the moment, you know, and that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah, no, look, it's a great idea. Again, born out of the simplest of things, realising that you had extra eggs and you wanted to pass them on, and you did it outside in an honesty box, and now it's grown into this much bigger business that's supporting other producers. The only question I have left for you is, what happened to Henrietta, Mrs. Brown, Mags and Willie? Are they after going the way of the elderly hens and cockerels?
Yeah, they've gone to heaven.
In heaven,
yeah. So they lived out their lives here, and they went to heaven, passed away in their sleep, I suppose.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, look, we salute them for having inspired this business. The website is farmsy.ie. That's FARMSY.ie. And as you said, delivering everywhere between Bandon and Blarney. It's been lovely talking to you. Michael and Carmel O'Sullivan, thank you so much for joining us on Red Business.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Red Business. All that's best about business in Cork.
Now, one of the biggest executive search firms has released figures showing pretty significant developments in the push towards gender equality. It happened during 2020 of all years, the year when it looked like nothing good happened. Maybe something good did. With me now is the managing partner at Odgers Burnstone Ireland, Mark O'Donnell. Mark, how are you?
Great, Jonathan. Thanks very much. Hope you're well.
I'm very well, thank you. Lots of changes last year. The recruitment sector was up and down. I mean, you guys deal with the top end, so the directors on the boards and the chief executives and the C-level officers. What kind of a year was it before we get to this particular issue?
It was a surprisingly good year, Jonathan, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, January, February was, I suppose, pre-pandemic in Ireland. And then in March, there was a real sense of nervousness about what's going to happen to the market. But we then saw activity held up. Organisations outside of maybe a six-week period, kind of end of March to April, you know, really picked up. And I had the sense they need to keep growing, keep doing things. So actually, very good year overall, thank God. So it kept up well.
Yeah, and that's good, because I suppose a lot of the companies that you're dealing with, the impact was less than it was in other sectors. So obviously retail, hospitality, they all took massive hits. But your bigger companies, your multinationals, your foreign direct investment, they all kind of kept going, which is a real example of this twin track economy that we have right now. Some sectors doing very badly and other sectors not impacted hugely by COVID-19.
Yeah, and I'd add to that FMCG organizations as well. That's a significant part of our business, and they had a big uptake in business due to food buying, etc. So, but you're right, hospitality, etc. really was got the real brunt of it. But overall, our client base are the large corporates, the MNCs. So they stayed fairly robust, I must say.
Now, the reason we're talking to you today is because this gender equality issue has been a big problem at the upper echelons of Irish business. So you had the traditional stereotype of the board being pale, male and stale, and arguably in this country, white. There were a lot of changes last year.
There was. It's been great. I think, you know, there's been this has been going the right direction for quite a while now, driven by things like the 30% Club and other initiatives like that. And we certainly decided to get on board with that a couple of years ago. And we felt that if we're going to get on board, we're going to try and make a real difference. So, you know, we started out really trying to make at least all of our shortlist 30% female. And, you know, we've been lucky in that we've gone much further than that now in 2020, which has been great. So it's continuing on that good work.
You've managed to put more people into senior director roles, and the pendulum swung. This was the first year ever, I think, that you put more women into those positions than you put men. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, that's a really, really interesting stat. So of all our chair and non-exec director placements, which we had a very substantial number last year, 53% of them were women. Which is fantastic. Now, a lot of that credit goes to the organizations themselves. They are putting pressure and they're talking to us about making sure their boards are diverse. And then it's our job to find those people to put them on the board. So it's a collaborative effort. And if we do have organizations that maybe aren't aware of that, or maybe it's not top of their agenda, we make sure to inform them. So very, very clear when we're talking to the organizations about working with them, that we work on this basis, that at least 30% of our shortlist is going to be female. So it is a collaborative effort, but we're delighted with the results. We really are.
The talent, of course, when you go looking for it, I'm presuming it is abundant. What is it like trying to recruit for those roles? Is it hard to get women to apply for them if they feel that they're still excluded in some way?
There's a couple of things. I think there is... The big issue you have is that because there hasn't been a lot of females coming through to these non-exec director positions, they are lacking a little bit of experience. And what you really need with the client is to say, you know, somebody has to give them a go and put them on a board, because they're eminently qualified outside of that. Generally, they have had fantastic careers. They're in senior positions and executive roles. So what you need to do is educate the client as to the capabilities and skill sets they'll bring to the board. So once you do that and they can clearly demonstrate the skills and capabilities, then the fact they haven't done it before dissipates. And that's really helping, I think. Second of all, I'd say is that I think as a rule in general, right across our business, we do find that men will generally put their hand up for anything. They'll say, yes, we can do it, no problem. Whereas females are more circumspect. They will review the opportunity. They will match their skills. They'll be more deliberate about it. So what we're trying to do is educate females sometimes and say, look, you may not have everything, but that's okay. There may be gaps, that's okay, but you have a lot of other qualities for the role. So it's a bit of an education, a bit of working with the female leaders and also working with the organizations to, I suppose, allow the first-time female non-exec director to come onto the board.
I mean, your company works in a lot of different markets. Where does Ireland sit when it comes to this particular challenge of not having enough female representation on boards, or not enough members of the senior management team who are women? Are we better or worse, and are we improving?
We're definitely improving and we're about average. I mean, interestingly, if you look at our stat there, which I just said to you, 53% of our non-exec and chair appointments were female. That compares with the current ISAC organization, which is only 27% of them have a female on the board. So you know, but that is an improvement. So we're about mid-level, Jonathan. We are getting better as a country, no doubt about it. But there's more to do, I think.
Okay, well, look, there is more to do, and maybe 2021 is the year to do it. Managing Partner at Rogers Berntsen Ireland, Mark O'Donnell, thanks so much for joining us, Mark.
Thanks, Jonathan.
My thanks as always to all of my guests. Don't forget, if you want to get involved, it's redbusiness@redfm.ie. Myra Hayes-Goff was the producer, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.